Welcome to the Your Brain Uncovered podcast, where it is my job to interview pioneering scientists and authors to tease out some of their most fascinating work. My name is Aya Turabian. I'm a translational neuroscience student and a researcher at University College London. This podcast show is my efforts to bring zero cost to consumer information and to just discuss, you know, neuroscience and psychology tools that can help you with your everyday life. So speaking of that, you know, we live in a world of overwhelming choice. Even decisions that used to be simple, like choosing a restaurant or, you know, what type of coffee I want to have in the morning, is now just fraught with over analyses. And honestly, technology is just making the issue even more pronounced. So if you want to buy a pair of, you know, white shoelaces online, all right, you have to kind of sort through thousands of items and read through hundreds of reviews. And that's an astounding amount of information to process, especially when you're just buying two pieces of string that cost less than your morning latte. But luckily enough, we're devoting this very episode to the neuroscience of decision making. And we're going to be joined by none other than the cognitive neuroscience Dr. Janina Huffman to help us better understand the cognitive underpinnings of decision making through the lens of memory. Dr. Huffman is a lecturer at the University of Bath with a PhD in psychology, and her research focuses on memory-based decision-making. Dr. Janina, welcome to the show. It's an honor to have you here. Dr. Janina Huffman, welcome to the show. It's an honor to have you here.
It's my pleasure to be here, Aya, and I thank you for the invitation to the podcast.
Well, thank you for being here. And so, speaking of decision-making, I mean, the question begs itself, how would you best describe what a decision is and what various factors contribute to its formation?
Okay, so let's start with from the perspective of a normal person. So when we think of decisions, then there are some decisions are more important than others. So we make decisions on a daily basis. So for instance, think about it, choose the food that you eat every day. You choose every day how to go to work. But there are also a lot bigger decisions. So for instance, think about big life decisions, whom to marry. Whether to buy an apartment or not, or whether to take upon a career opportunity. Most people think of the bigger life decisions as important for themselves, but the decision scientists, for instance, would also consider simple classification decisions, such as is something that we see a cat or a dog, or is somebody, a friend or a foe, as part of the decision-making process. One factor that influences decision-making, but also how people make decisions, is the importance. So we've been talking about habitual decisions, such as transport decisions that you actually don't make you don't actually decide every day anew how to go to work. You just follow your pathway to basically very, very big life decisions. And in those cases, you might think longer and engage in a very different decision-making process. So importance of the decision is one aspect that influences how you make decisions. Then there's something like irreversibility. So the idea is, in this case, so can I make a decision again? So what are the costs of it? Can I make a change to my planned course? You might be able. So for instance, if I now take on a new job, a new career opportunity, then obviously I can also quit the job within a month's time.
Yeah.
For other decisions, that's not necessarily so easily possible, or it comes at a very high cost, such as, for instance, a decision about a divorce. Mm. Okay, and those are factors of the decision itself, but then there are also context or personality factors that might influence how we make a decision. So, for instance, context factors are typically something like time pressure.
Okay.
So, if I have to make a fast decision, I will decide differently and quicker than if I have if I have a long time to think about it. Or multitasking. So this might often happen in contexts where people are very, very busy. So think about, for instance, nurses at a hospital. They often have to find out which medication a particular patient needs to have, but they are all the time interrupted when making this decision. And so this is something that might lead to a lot of medical failures in treatment. Okay, so this would be multitasking, and but there are also individual differences. So people are more or less prone to, some people have a kind of a higher appetite for risk, or they are more competitive, and they will take decisions differently than people who are very risk averse or careful and a bit anxious.
Interesting.
So these are personal.
And so practically, a decision is just a commitment. It's a commitment to a plan, maybe, or a decision process, and it kind of leads often to, various consequences. Is it like that? Is that how we can?
Yes. So if you define what a decision is, usually we decide between multiple options. Mm-hmm. So you have multiple alternatives, like different jobs, and those different jobs have different characteristics, different features. For instance, all of them come with for instance, a different wage, but you also have a different task, maybe a different company, mm-hmm. and so on. So these options have different features, and often you have to trade off those different features against each other. So, for instance, a job at a new startup is quite prestigious, yes. But it comes as you basically might be in a very nice working environment, but it also comes at the cost of maybe not earning so much income, but you also have long working hours. Okay. And so you have to trade off when you make a decision, mm-hmm. always cost and benefits. That's one definition criteria. And another one is you often take a decision to reach a goal, mm-hmm. To fulfill a goal that you have in mind, such as, for instance, you would like to have a nice career path, yeah. and plan your career path ahead and commit to this goal. And it also comes with certain consequences and risks, such as so one consequence is obviously the income that you have, but potential future career path. So if I start in a startup company, then it might be the case that I can easily transition back to a more standard enterprise. But at some point maybe I'm too old to, or my own life has evolved so much that I don't want to take the risk again of working in a very small startup.
I see how it is. So so obviously there's a variety of factors that are kind of influencing our decision-making process, whether it's, like maybe it's bearing evidence from like prior knowledge, or even, outweighing the costs and rewards associated with the possible, outcomes. Speaking of that, there's this prevailing theory in neuroscience that holds that so people make decisions based on an integrated, calculation that goes on in the frontal cortex of the brain. Is that true? Is that theory true? Or are there more than one network involved in this process?
There is a huge debate about how people make actually decision, whether this is kind of one network that might be active in the frontal cortex, or whether there are different systems that are engaged in decision making. And so the debate is about whether there is only one system or several or two. Oftentimes it's saying, well, there are two systems. And so one system is more like the rational decision maker. This is kind of the person that calculates all the costs and benefits of for each option that or opportunity that it can take, and then just says, well, I choose the option with the higher reward.
Got it.
So this is like the rational decision making. And on the other hand, the assumption in these dual process theories is that there is a more automatic way in people with associative way of how people can make decisions, saying, for instance, that, well, oftentimes you are influenced by experience, by emotion, and these impressions happen so quickly that they trigger an automatic response. And you have an automatic preference for one option over the other.
Okay.
And the idea in those dual process theories is that usually the rational decision maker competes with the more automatic decision making system. And so the rational decision maker has to intervene when the automatic response is not really, really helpful. So this is something that you can very nicely illustrate in food choice, I think. So food choice is a perfect example, because here, so oftentimes we really like food that is unhealthy for us.
Yeah.
So chips, chocolate, name it, all of these deep sins. And it's very hard to suppress, especially if you're starving, these kind of unhealthy options and go rather for the nice apple and or the more healthy meal that that you have to prepare on your own, such as like a nice salad.
This is quite true.
So in this case, you are really your rational thinking system has to override the automatic response.
Wow. I mean, speaking of food, I feel like the perfect analogy would be deciding on a restaurant for dinner, for example. I mean, if a restaurant has, let's say, good food, one brain circuit is activated. If the food is bad, then a different circuit is activated. And then there's a third circuit, which is mainly the focal point of discussion in this episode, which is memory. The third circuit's kind of recording the memories of the experience, good or bad. And then all these three circuits are crucial to the process of decision making, so they work hand in hand. Is that a good analogy, or should I try again?
No, I think that's a very good analogy. So basically you have different kind of processes that one part is emotions that are activated by seeing the food, like disgust, but also something like positive associations, like it's tasty and savory. On the other hand, you have experiences, memories that are also activated, and those are basically coded also in the brain in different regions. So basically, memories are more associated, as far as I know, in the parental lobe, and then on the other hand, you have higher activation maybe in the amygdala if you experience as emotions. And on the other hand, if you really can kind of have to override an automatic response and say, well, I go rather for the apple instead of the chocolate bar, then you activate the frontal system, so where working memory is sitting.
Oh, interesting. I mean, your work specifically, it showed that the working memory, so aka the ability to simultaneously store and manipulate information, likely underpins the evaluation of decision outcomes, specifically in, adults. Can you please elaborate a little more on the relationship between the two, so between memory and decision making?
So when I speak about memory, then I think of several types of memory abilities as well. And we already talked a bit about them or here in the show. Mm. So one memory, this is kind of what everybody typically thinks of when talking about memory, is long-term memory.
Okay.
So there's the ability to retrieve facts, personal experiences, and but also semantic knowledge that is like facts from memory, basically.
Interesting.
So that's one part of memory.
Okay.
But then we also have this working memory. This is kind of like very similar in the concept as a processor in a computer.
Mm.
It's basically our information processing system that allows us to integrate, manipulate information while storing other information at the same point in time. So a very nice example for it is, for instance, that assume that you are driving a car.
Yeah.
And usually when you're on the road, on the highway, everything works nicely. You can talk with other people who are with you in your car.
Hmm.
When you start parking, then you stop the conversation.
It's quite true.
And the reason for that is because your working memory is overloaded. You need to focus on parking.
Yeah.
And so this is an important system, working memory, for focusing attention. It's also important for us to integrate information, but also then to neglect and ignore hints from the environment.
Mm.
So if I, for instance, have to ignore the chocolate cake, this is also a task for working memory.
Interesting.
So it's very important, and it's one system that underpins as well our decision making.
Mm-hmm.
Now we've been talking in the past about these two dual process systems, so the rational decision maker and the one that is more associative.
Yes.
And the two types of memory, working memory and kind of long-term memory or episodic memory,
yeah,
they have different relationships to the dual process, to the two dual processes that we can engage in when we're making decisions. So namely, people who have a high working memory,
mm,
they are more likely to engage in the rational decision-making processes that are trading off costs and benefits, and they are also a bit better at doing so.
Hmm. What about the people that are higher on their short-term memory? So the opposite end of the spectrum, how would that differ? And you're touching here on notable individual differences within the scope of your work. Do you know what causes those individual differences in regards to memory? So why is it that different people have different strengths and abilities?
Okay, so let's put it like that. So for working memory, what you typically find, if people have good processing of information, then they also make very more rational decisions.
Okay.
So they trade off more costs and benefits.
Hmm.
If you have people rather who think that they have a very good episodic memory, then they are the ones who draw often more on experiences they have made in the past.
Interesting.
Whether this is better or worse, that might differ. Then, so the other question is, and this is now the question that you posed, whether people who have, what causes those differences,
yes,
in long-term memory, as well as working memory or information processing. And so a lot of those differences in memory are basically heritable. The variance in those abilities is heritable.
Mm.
So we find that 50% of the differences in memory abilities They are caused by genetic factors, but obviously also schooling and education play a huge role.
Okay, so I can, so it's a mix of nature and nurture. It's not,
yes,
it's not either or, is it?
It's usually a mix of nature and nurture. In the past, the debate has mostly focused on the genetic, so or mostly it said, well, 50% is genetic, because what is very hard to kind of quantify is the effect of schooling, for instance.
Oh, okay.
So you can easily kind of figure out whether something is genetically determined, because you can run something like twin study. So you compare identical twins with twins who are non-identical, and then you can kind of assess how much genes contribute. But for schooling, this is a lot more difficult, because everybody goes to school.
That's quite true. So it's very hard to quantify how much is it really contributing. Are there any other factors, such as, you know, a parental guidance or peers influencing this? Or is it just a matter of education and genetics in general?
Well, yeah, so it's obviously, it's so usually it's an interaction between the genes and the environment. And well, usually into the environment, we also count the parents, their education, but it's also the food, healthiness of nutrition, sports, and so on. So that might contribute to developing better memory abilities.
So this is us just talking about healthy children and healthy individuals. What about individuals with mental illnesses? How does the relationship between memory and decision making get affected in that case? How is it influenced?
In general, this obviously depends a lot on the disease that we are talking about. And also what which memory component is then affected within the disease. So one mental illness that is quite prevalent is, for instance, depression.
Okay.
And depressive individuals are oftentimes characterized by showing, for instance, something that is less. So a less optimistic sense of life. Most of us have kind of the idea in mind that we are when we are told that negative events might happen to us, we estimate the probability of those events as being less likely.
Okay.
Than for everybody else.
So we don't have a negativity bias.
So we don't have a negativity bias. Oftentimes when we judge ourselves, we are very optimistic.
That's good.
We think that the likelihood of me hitting getting hit by cancer is from my perspective a lot lower than the average probability. Or on the other hand, so I judge myself as being a lot more satisfied with life than everybody else. So this is kind of deemed an optimism bias.
Yeah.
Now, depressive individuals, they don't show that.
Oh.
They are more realistic, actually. So in their assessment. So they think, so basically, that so when once you tell them what the actual rate of cancer is, they actually think, well, this is then also the same likelihood as with which I would get cancer. So they are more, in this case, making more accurate, more optimal decisions because they are less overly optimistic.
And can I please know, I'm quite curious. So is that caused by a dysfunction to certain neural circuits, or is this, what causes them to, you know, really think differently? And process things differently than, you know, someone that is not depressed would.
So the hypothesis is basically that they kind of engage more strongly in like this rational thinking process.
Okay.
And so they evaluate the costs and benefits differently. So for instance, what we find in normal individuals is that people oftentimes overestimate small probabilities
mm-hmm.
and underestimate high probability.
Okay.
And here in this case, this is also a bias that is not shown by depressive individuals so much, mm-hmm. and this makes them a bit more rational. But it depends also pretty much on the biases that you look at.
Of course, so it's quite it's quite subjective and sensitive, and it kind of differs from one person to another. I mean, taking into account everything you've kindly, you know, mentioned, from individual differences to being healthy or not, and I guess that all comes into play, doesn't it?
Yes. So I guess, all of that would come into play. But if we now look specific to people with diseases, then I think so depression, for instance, is a disease that is very broad,
okay.
that is not so restricted. So oftentimes, decisions are impaired, where people make less well adapted decisions depends a lot on the disease. Yeah. Okay. I mean, so for instance, if we one group of people that I studied are patients with multiple sclerosis.
Okay.
Which is a neuropsychological disease as well. So it's a disease of the central nerve system. And it is characterized on the one hand in neuronal systems by impairments initially in vision,
okay.
but also the first sign that multiple sclerosis patients report on their own is, well, they have memory deficits. They report that they have strongly problems at integrating new information that they've learned.
Is it like fuzzy memory? So they're suffering from the inability to concentrate and recall detailed memories. Oh, that's
so one part is so obviously problems to remember the recent events, yes.
Mm.
But what is even more harmed is basically the ability to concentrate on on information that they see. And so here, for instance, you can see that they are harmed by them asking them to, for instance, add several numbers together, which is a small working memory test. Or by asking them to repeat a series of numbers, which is also a work memory test, and you will find that this ability is quite impaired. So it's mostly the concentration that hinders them to integrate information. Mm-hmm. And in this case, these multiple sclerosis patients, what you also find is that they, to some degree, that they make then worse decisions. So they struggle a lot, especially with kind of trading off costs and benefits when they have to make decisions.
That's quite unfortunate.
And this is quite.
It's quite unfortunate because, I mean, it does. If you were to talk about memory loss, especially since with multiple sclerosis, there's like demyelination, right? So does that lead to dementia? Further on down the line, does that cause dementia in some sort of way?
Yes. So the demyelination over the long run will also cause some form of dementia. So multiple sclerosis is characterized in addition by people then experiences kind of deficits,
yes,
all across the nervous system, mm-hmm, and which part of the brain is hit the most is varies also a lot between individuals.
Okay.
It goes, so it develops in quite in certain across stages. So for a long time, people might not have any new symptoms and it might even get better, but then they are hit by the next stage, mm-hmm, and their symptoms will, or their health will deteriorate quite fast. So on the one hand, you have cognitive impairments such as memory and attention that might lead then over the long run to something that is more severe like dementia. But on the other hand, there are also motor deficits,
okay,
that starts with things like grasping and walking differences, difficulties, to then over the long run not being able to walk in anymore independently. So it's a whole nervous system that is affected.
That's quite unfortunate. And I mean, if we were to look at it from a broader scope, you know, we've covered pretty much healthy individuals, unhealthy individuals, and we can see that it's really not a linear process, right? So memory and decision making, whether it improves or not, it's very subjective, and it's not there's no linear progression in it, like a lot across our lifespan. What really advice would you give anyone out there that would just want to make, you know, more coherent decisions on a day-to-day basis? What would you say as a basic criteria?
Okay, from my perspective, I think depends a bit on also obviously on how and what type of decision it is. So oftentimes the decisions that we make are not so consequential. So then you can just go with your gut. That oftentimes, because if we go with our gut, we oftentimes base our decisions on past experiences, and that might be in a lot of environments quite helpful in a lot of circumstances. However, if you if you have to make a big life decision, yeah, so then I would recommend to not only think about it twice or three times, but also to use other people get help to make a decision for you. And the reason for that is oftentimes other people might have very, very different views, very different opinions. Mm. And so if you consider those, even if you don't really rationally integrate them, you might minimize a bit the error of making the completely wrong choice.
Okay. So cognitive biases are kind of reduced in a sense when you take in another person's opinion.
Yes, cognitive biases might be reduced if you ask others, but they might also reduce or go in a different direction if you just think about a decision another time in a very different setting.
Oh.
That might also help.
Right.
So if you can't, ask a lot of others, then just wait a bit, and try to take your mind off, and then think about it again.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I'm going to be using that tip and trick from now on. Hopefully, I'll be able to make better informed decisions, whether it's my morning coffee or where to move. So thank you, Dr. Janina. Honestly, that it's been a pleasure to have you here and to be able to talk about all of this. You're a bank of knowledge on decision making, and I'm highly grateful to have you here.
Thank you very much again, Aya, for the invite. And yeah, I'm very curious about the next upcoming episodes, and I'm thinking that I will listen now to your podcast a lot more often than I did.
Thank you. Well, to all you listeners out there, I've provided a link to Dr. Hoffman's own research blog right below. And if you want to read more of her articles, they're found in the show notes as well. quite interesting, so go ahead and do so. If you want to support the podcast, please subscribe on Spotify, leave me a comment if you have any feedback, and on Apple, you can also leave a review and some comments so I could get to, you know, improve the podcast experience for you. I'll see you on the next episode. Thank you for listening, and more importantly, thank you for your interest in science.